The separation of church and state has taken a new path versus the original intent, which was to keep the state out of the church. Today's interpretation is to keep the church out of the state and other aspects of day-to-day life, by the way. That twisting of original intent is one of the reasons why so many are protesting what's called the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, most recently passed by Indiana as well as Arkansas shortly after Indiana. Joining us now to talk about this issue is an original co-author of the 1993-94 federal version of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act that was signed into law by Bill Clinton. He's also the chancellor of Patrick Henry College, chair of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, and head of the Convention of States Organization, Mike Farris. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
And among all the links that apply to Mike, and of course you'll find them at our website, Convention of States, is at conventionofstates.com, and you'll be interested to see how progress is being made on what started as an idea but just might become a reality, but that's another talk for another time. When I mentioned in the intro, Mike, that you were the co-author of the federal version of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, is there a significant difference between the federal and what the states have been crafting? Otherwise, why would there have to be a state-by-state act if there is the federal act that's enacted?
Well, first, the Indiana law and virtually all the other state laws that have copied the federal act have done so accurately. I mean, there is no meaningful difference between the Indiana law and the federal law, especially as that law was interpreted by the Supreme Court in the Hobby Lobby case. The reason that there needs to be state laws rather than just having the congressional law, because the way we wrote it originally would have made all this moot. The states wouldn't have had to have done this. But the Supreme Court ruled in another case that Congress didn't have the power to protect religious freedom against state violations, that the state legislatures would have to do that. I disagreed with that outcome, but, you know, well, they're on the Supreme Court, I'm not. And so a number of states started passing state versions of the law to make sure that state governments couldn't violate religious freedom either.
Well, it sounds like the Supreme Court, my first thought was the 10th Amendment, but it sounds just like where it's obviously the in the Constitution for that's something that the federal government oversees. They just wanted to double up on protection, it sounded like.
Yeah, I mean, in the 14th Amendment, it says no state shall deny any person liberty without due process. And in the fifth section of the 14th Amendment, it says Congress has the power to pass appropriate laws to protect liberty. And so religious liberty is one of those liberties that's protected there against state encroachment. And so, you know, Congress thought it clearly had the right to protect liberty. And so, you know, sometimes the Supreme Court and the original meaning of the Constitution is in agreement, but most of the time it's not. They kind of do their own thing. And as a result of that, this particular fix, which was responding to another Supreme Court decision where they threw religious freedom into the trash can. So the first wave was in response to a Supreme Court decision that says religious freedom is not that important anymore. And the second wave was when they said, well, each state's going to have to do their own. So every bit of this is responding to messes by the Supreme Court.
So with Mike Farris, who is one of the co-authors of the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act, also Chancellor of Patrick Henry College, Chair of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, Head of the Convention of States, conventionofstates.com for that, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. Now, I've done something radical. I've actually sat down and I read the Indiana Freedom, the act that they put into play and that they are bending on it now. And it's simple English, most of it 2-3-syllable words, nothing really over anyone's head. I don't see gay, homosexual, LGBT, anywhere in this act.
No, nor will you see homeschooling or abortion or lots of other things. This is a legal standard for how you decide religious liberty cases. And the standard that we wrote, we didn't make up any of the legal jargon that's in there. We took, by the way, it was a very wide coalition of people that wrote this. My co-chairman was Mark Stern of the American Jewish Congress. On the committee was people from the ACLU, people for the American Way, the National Association of Evangelicals, the Baptist Joint Committee. It was all over the map, politically, religiously, and, you know, bipartisan, tripartisan, ecumenical to the max. And we just simply agreed on two things. Number one, religious freedom is for everybody, even if your views are unpopular. And then secondly, that we were going to use time-honored legal terms that had a lot of history behind them, so we didn't have to guess at the meaning of the words and the phrases. And so everything we did was from the traditional Supreme Court test on how you do religious freedom analysis. Does the person have a sincere belief? Has the government burdened that sincere belief? If the government claims the need to override religious action in a particular case, the government has a heavy burden of proving there's a compelling interest, and then we have to look at the last standard. Is there a less restrictive alternative, something that will achieve the government's purpose and not burden the person's religious freedom, which really is a good point on all these clashes with same-sex weddings, which is where the only place where this law could affect someone is if someone sued a Christian business owner for refusing to comply with the state law regarding non-discrimination against homosexuality, and they say, you know, we're suing you, you violated our rights. The legal question from RFRA would be, is there an alternative available that would give the same-sex couple what they want and preserve religious freedom? And in every case I can imagine, the answer is yes. You know, you don't have to go to this particular florist. Other people will give you. They can still get their flowers. They can still get their cakes baked. They can still get somebody other, you know, they don't need to force this Baptist minister to perform their ceremony. They can get a Unitarian minister who'll be glad to perform their ceremony. And so that's the kind of analysis that should go on, is there an alternative? If we were, if the gay couples who are wanting to be married, I mean, it's hard for me even to say those words out loud because I don't think it really is marriage, but nonetheless, if a gay couple wants to get married and you know, nobody would do anything for them, it might be a closer case, but here, they have lots of alternatives. They don't have to force the one Christian in town to perform their wedding or to take their pictures or to bake them a cake in violation of their own conscience. Why can't we just let people go where they're they'll get services and not force people to participate who have a moral objection to doing so?
Rabbi, on time with Mike Farris, co-author of the original Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act, also head of the Convention of States, which you can learn more about at conventionofstates.com, listening to Issues and Ideas. Actually, you know, here's another hypothetical. It doesn't have to be something from a Christian belief. Let's just say a very strict believer of Islam believes that all women should be completely covered in a full burqa. He has a store, a specialty store that caters to the Islamic culture. An American woman decides to walk in because she wants to get something for an Islamic woman she works with, and this is the best place to do it. Woman walks in dressed, well, let's just say not moderately provocatively, and that strict Muslim chooses not to serve that woman because she violates his sense of religion. I haven't heard something like that mentioned in this conversation. It just seems to be the Christians get attacked.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's a perfectly valid example. Or, you know, a Jewish butcher who, you know, follows the Orthodox standards of kosher food preparation, being, you know, they come in and say, I want to order pork chops. You know, cut me, you know, slaughter a pig for me. Or, you know, it's just any number of examples. It's only Christians that are being picked on here, and I think that the real goal is to discredit Christianity at every possible turn, and to silence anyone who has the audacity to believe that homosexuality is morally wrong. That's what we're really talking about, is crushing dissent.
We have about a minute left here. More than one state now, not just Indiana, is putting in specifically this does not apply or is not intended to go after LGBTs, gay, homosexuals. When I hear this, I think of the Me Too attitude. Well, why won't the Well, again, Muslims say, well, we should be mentioning there too. Feminists, hey, what about women? That whole Me Too thing
Really because if they put that kind of language in, you have that problem as well as the problem of here comes the, I was in court in San Francisco. I was an observer and friend of John Whitehead who litigated a case where a music minister of a church in San Francisco, they found out he was a homosexual and they fired him. And he sued under the city's gay rights law and they defended on the basis of religious freedom. Today that case would come out differently. The church won then. But now, under this rubric, the church could be forced to hire a homosexual minister of music or a minister of anything. We're crossing a line. We're crossing a very dangerous line where we're preferring homosexuality over religious freedom.
And
that's a balance that most Americans would not support, and certainly the founders of this country would not support. Is it really still America if we lose our commitment to religious liberty?
And it shouldn't be those who speak the loudest. It should be those who speak with total fairness and respect. In a mutual sense, learn more about this issue and with the Convention of States organization, which is something we've talked about here on the show with other people too. It's something very interesting that's moving forward very quickly. ConventionofStates.com. We've been joined this morning by one of the co-authors of the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act, signed in law by Bill Clinton in 1993, by the way, as well as the Chancellor of Patrick Henry College, Chair of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, and head of the Convention of States organization, Mike Ferris. Mike, thanks so much for being here this morning.
It's my pleasure.